the air, gentlemen.
Excellent.
Yeah. This is number 71. Notes Underground. Let's play some music. That's a pretty sweet track, Dan.
Thanks, man. Yeah, found it on a Radio 1 show that was played for me.
You recorded off the radio?
Yeah, onto your tape cassettes?
Into a certain program.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you using Audio Hijack?
No, I'm actually using Total Recorder.
Audio Hijack, that's a little bit of, they're kind of incriminating themselves in the name.
It's a great piece of software, is it? Though. Yeah.
The one I've used is honestly the best $15 Canadian I've ever spent in my life. It does more than I ever need.
What's Rogue Amoeba? Have you heard of that company, Rogue Amoeba?
No.
Yeah, they make Audio Hijack. It's like shareware. It's like 10 pounds or 20 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty full featured.
So does it record whatever comes out of the main audio, or
exactly.
Does it record a specific program?
Anything. Any software audio stream, it pretends to be an audio hijack, isolate
the program, so I can, because you know how you have multiple programs like loading up your audio out,
it'll do one of them.
It'll just do one, so I could I could isolate Safari, and then it won't get like the
your mail
volume up
or
the volume down or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
But what radio programs do you record?
This happened to be BBC Radio 1. And this was from Giles Peterson.
So you knew this particular show was going to be on Radio 1, and you pressed the record button as if it...
I used their listen again feature.
Oh, okay.
And then I taped it. Yeah.
Interesting. I was going to say, that's some real studying.
So off the Webernet.
Schedule and sorting out and pressing record right when you need to record, like the old days with the VCR or something.
You can make it do all of that, actually. But no, if I'm working on something that I don't need to be super, super focused on, I'll start a stream and then tape it and then throw it onto the pod.
How many times did your parents call you to get you to help with the VCR when they were trying to record like something on KQED?
Yeah, all the time. Well, our TV, when I was a kid, my parents put the TV on PBS, took the knob off.
Oh, jerks.
I know.
I was stuck.
I had a babysitter come over.
Whatever's on this channel is fine. You can do it all day long, but only this channel.
Exactly. Our TV was black and white and stuck on PBS. My friends used to call it PBS Pretty Boring Stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but that'll learn him, dude. Now you're a PhD studying cockroaches.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, look where I've gotten to.
Yeah.
But there was a time my babysitter came over and we realized that the knob from the stove fit on the TV. So people come over and be like, what are you watching? You're like, broil. Let's see what's on bake. You know? I didn't know what cartoons were until I was like 15.
Dude, that's have you seen that show that's on 350? Yeah. It is so cool.
Exactly. So
it's on 350 at about 8 o'clock.
No, man, I was a total TV-aholic. I remember I was proud. When I was like 8 years old, I had a competition with my buddies to see who had the most commercials memorized, and I won with 115. Just from watching TV, I wasn't even trying. I just had them memorized from watching so much TV. Like my buddy had like 96, you know, and we just on the bus ride home, the entire bus way back, we just start reeling off the commercials songs. We had memorized, the songs and the whole commercial. And it's just amazing when you're a kid, like this stuff just fills your brain. I think I watched around 8 hours a day ish.
Are you kidding?
I was really into it. Wow. News with my parents. That's starting parenting. From like Scooby-Doo when I got home till I had to go to bed.
But see, that's not necessarily bad but in terms of your evolutionary fitness. Because, you know, if you have this cultural knowledge and you can be really witty with it and impress people and be really charming.
Yeah, but I'm not witty or charming.
That's not true. That is not true.
Now, hang on. What? Then you're more likely to have more kids. So it actually was a good move.
Because your brain is your sex
biggest
organ.
Erogenous zone. Exactly. Which means so you're saying I'm more likely to bag more ladies.
Because you can quote Voltron.
Sweet. I haven't tried that one yet, but I'm going to go on it. I've been working the Thundercats angle. Yeah.
Chitara, why don't we go to the cat lair? You know? Mumra.
Yeah.
I remember some amazing... some amazing cartoon discussions with Mitch at Berkeley. And some amazing voices.
Like what?
Voltron. Like, remember the Freudian slip? Remember you used to do the joke about the Freudian slip?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Mitch used to do this joke, which was like, they're, you know, remember Voltron? They're all different. They form the big robot and the different, you know, yellow lion.
Form the head.
Yeah, the final one was like, it's a Freudian slip because the black lion would say, and I'll give the head.
Oh man.
Oops.
Yeah. College days. We used to have that. There was that the Heuristic Squelch or something like that.
Oh, great paper.
There was like an underground newspaper at school, and they do it was like once a quarter or once a month. It wasn't very often, but when they came out, everyone got one because they were fucking hilarious. Because it would like they would just cap on like the administration and like. Then they'd have all these top 10 lists that were just super funny, you know, like the top 10 like Shakespearean books that made it into the porn industry or whatever, Romeo and Juliet and The Merchant of Penis and the rest.
It's still going. Last time I was there.
Really?
Yeah, they still make them. The top 10 lists are still just as irreverent. Like, there was like, you know, remember there was one that was top 10 events at the Stoner Olympics?
Yeah, I do. I don't remember what
bong
it is.
Bong water polo. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Anyways. Stuff that doesn't really translate that well into podcast land.
Yes.
Oh, no, because kids these days, they don't know anything about such things.
They don't read. They don't. Well, they watch TV. The TV part might work, but they watch YouTube.
Yeah, they watch 2-minute snippets of, slideshow presentations of Jessica Alba or something, and that's it.
Speaking of YouTube, we had a listener send in a David Hasselhoff versus the Boards of Canada video on YouTube, so I pulled it into a MP3 and thought we'd play it on the show because it's just that ridiculous.
Awesome.
Because everyone has been writing in about how much they love the ridiculous mashups.
Really?
No.
But now we have
here we
launch.
Go. Okay, all right.
I
here we go.
Could have pulled that off.
so lonesome all the time. Since I left my baby behind on the bayou, saving nickels, saving dimes, working till the sun don't shine.
That song Ouch. Raises so many more questions than gives answers.
Ooh, is it good that one click can create a mashup, for instance?
Yeah. And did the original artist of that mashup really intend for it to be that nails against chalkboard bad?
Yeah, that's like you feel, that's like you wake up like sweating after, like that you hear that kind of thing in your dream. When you're like,
yeah.
When you have a fever,
yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one, Mitch. I think you hit the horrible nail on the head here.
It's going into a David Lynch film.
Yeah, it is. It is. Everything's moving a little too slowly, and I'm feeling woozy all of a sudden.
Yeah,
man, that was wrong, but in the right way. They really hit a resonance.
And
with
that raises the question: should you do mashups while you're in the middle of
a
like,
giant
a serious
trip?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
lost in the K-hole. Yeah. It raises the other question, which we were talking about earlier, which is, will audio compression, like MP3 artifacts, ever be as cool as record needle pops?
There's no reason to say... I my first response to that was no.
Yeah.
No way in hell.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking there's no reason why it won't. Because...
no one thought that those needle pops were cool when that was the only medium.
But
that was a modern medium.
But the reason you would say no is because those needle pops sound so familiar from so many other places, like a fire or like the rain, or, you know, like some natural elements, you know, and those needle pops have that kind of natural thing about them.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Compression artifacts don't, but at the same time, needle pops just remind you of lo-fi, and there's so many great musics that came out when they had nothing better than lo-fi like capabilities, like a lot of reggae, a lot of dub, a lot of R&B. And so that's cool.
Jazz.
Yeah, and you like to hear it from that original
classic
way.
Classic rock.
All of it.
This is sensitive Mitch is talking now.
And some new age, Mitch, don't forget, don't be discouraging to new age
classical
music.
Yeah, like Yanni's first album.
Yeah,
like, totally,
it was totally analog, and we love it for it. But
I think there is a difference, which is that I associate needle pops with stuff that still has the full dynamic range and the full frequency response.
Right, which you'll never get out of a compression.
Exactly. I think the difference to me is that the compressed stuff, you can tell that it doesn't have all the bass or all the treble, whereas a lot of the vinyl stuff has the full range. And then it adds these harmonics, which sound kind of cool.
It sounds too like the MP3 stuff. It sounds like it's being played out of a Coke can.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
but
when you compare like a record to an MP3, exactly, like you can actually hear the different instruments. Like you can, it's like there's texture. There's like layers.
Yeah. You're not putting in the bandwidth to get the full dynamic range and frequency.
But if you, I mean, some reggae was built on that. Some dance hall and reggae early stuff was built on that, like Alfie and Donnie and some of the Scatolites albums. They don't have that full range. They really like to sit high in the treble, and that's part of just their sound. And so you could say that, you know, great songs could be built in a limited range, and the compression artifacts are cool and they're kind of a signature to it. Possibly.
Bob, the compression artifacts or the record needle stuff?
No, I'm talking about digitally speaking. So, like, say everyone that was born in the late 80s may grow up knowing nothing about analog artifacts.
So the Scatolites have stuff which sounds better?
Well, it just was limited in the upper. They were just always in the upper. That was the way it was recorded.
Yeah.
They were just always in the upper tones. And so there wasn't a lot of bass to it, but it was great music, and it was lo-fi, and that was cool.
Yeah.
So you didn't need a huge range. But anyway, I mean, it's like, There's a lot of arguments that if you don't know better,
I think the only reason that we're so dependent on compression is because disc usage is such an issue, and that if everybody had a terabyte size iPod mini, then we'd all be using CD quality MP3s.
Yeah, and waiting for our stuff to download.
No, and like faster bandwidth. Like, there's no like from a product like. From an actual product level, like there's nothing interesting about like having it be poor quality. Like even if you're talking about, even if you're talking about dub or you know, something, because even at a limited range, you're going to get better sound definition out of a heavier file.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, we're just tolerating this system right now for convenience. And
part of the reason it's tolerated is because most people listen to stuff while they're commuting on noisy things with very small earplugs.
Right. Yeah. But also,
so there's no point putting in huge bass because your earbud can't play it back.
20 years from now, though, that will be a signature to the song and the era. You know, that kind of limitation will be basically proof of authenticity in a way, or you know, the time late was.
Oh, that's true. People are now engineering music toward like MP3 compression. Like they're saying like when you, like I'm sure that if you were to go to a professional studio, they'd be like, well like because you've got these engineers who have these amazing sound systems in their studios, and it plays back and it sounds sweet.
Right.
But then once you compress it, it sounds like shit. So that's like one of the litmus tests is like, can you compress it to an MP3 and it still sound good?
Yeah. Wait, are you saying they have to record it differently than the original to make
not
it sound
record
good?
It. Or they can just master it differently.
Yeah.
So you still record it as best you can.
Yeah, but you master it that when you're in the engineering phase. Oh, Bailey.
Oh.
Bailey's like, I don't care what you're talking about. I can hear everything crystal clear.
She says record
and
this.
And it's a little bit loud.
in my friends who have recorded albums, when they're doing the whole mastering thing and they're sitting down with their master guy, they always listen to it on the speakers in the studio. Then they go in their car and they listen to it in their car.
And
then they go listen to it in the elevator. And then they go listen to it like everywhere.
You have to
because they have to see, they have to know that it sounds good on all these different systems, which that's a huge magic trick, man.
Well, no, but that's,
you've had a friend who's had a song big enough to be played in an elevator?
No.
No, but you've got to test out different speaker systems, and that's what makes a good engineer, because any jerk on the street can make the levels sound pretty good on one system. But can you make it sound good on a universal level on every system? So that whether it's compressed or whether it's on great speakers or on pieces
of like I'm pretty sure Michael Jackson, when he was recording Thriller, made at the same time the Muzak version and made sure it was still cool, because it definitely is, and it holds true.
Have you ever heard the Nirvana?
Oh, no.
Did you know that?
No.
That what's Nick Novacek or wait, what's the guy's name?
Chris Novacek, bassist.
He worked for Muzak because their headquarters was in Seattle.
You're kidding me.
He worked for Muzak, and
Nirvana or before?
Before.
Oh.
And so he had all these friends there or whatever. Yeah. He actually got like the whole Nevermind CD put on Muzak tapes.
Because that's cash, isn't
it? It's so funny, dude. It sounds so hilarious. Stupid. Oh, I love it. It's like elevator music, Nirvana elevator music style. It's like, and it sounds good, you know? Like, that's the thing. It's like they wrote great melodies. You know what I mean? They just put like hardcore guitars on them to make them really crunchy. But like the melodies themselves are actually like really like,
right,
you know, grandma would like it.
But is that residuals?
Da 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 da. Yeah.
It works well at any shopping mall. Do bands get residuals for that?
I don't know.
They must, right? Because they wrote the songs. I would assume so. I'm going to look that up right now while we play the next song.
Wait, who was that first band? We didn't talk about that.
Oh, they,
Spence.
Yeah, that
he
was.
He brought that in.
Pama International. They're a British dub infused rocksteady sensation.
Is that?
Wow, you're a marketing.
Yeah.
You really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was your first choice of words?
No.
Marketing sensation?
exactly.
So that's coming from the heart, is it, Spencer?
Yeah, exactly. That's how the music makes me feel. That's how their agent makes me feel. No, I like that track. I heard it on the radio, but
that was really good.
I haven't, you know, apparently they're tipped for a lot of good things, but going to their webpage actually was a little bit of an experiment in marketing.
They're UK, though.
They're UK. No, they're good. I mean, they're, you know, it's good.
Cool, man.
Their message, I thought. I mean, I don't really know what their message is yet, so.
Yeah. It's one of those blank web pages that just says,
buy our stuff, because it's got rock steady dub sensation-ness.
I want them for my bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
They'll still do that.
That'll be a while, because you're not even Jewish.
No, I'm not even Jewish.
Yeah.
Can you have after the fact bar mitzvahs? Like, if I converted, could I go back and redo it?
I don't know. But
I don't think you can.
Why not, right?
I don't think you can have a bar mitzvah.
Whenever
I don't think
you're ready to become a man.
Yeah, and I'm only halfway there.
Like a born again Jew.
Yeah.
whatever you do, though, I'm not coming to your bris.
Dan. Let's say that you were becoming a man, and it was your bar mitzvah.
Yeah. Oh, I know exactly what song I'd play.
What song would you play?
Ladytron, They Only Want You When You're 17.
All right, let's try it.
So when you're 21, you're no fun.
Thank you.
That's insane.
Nice.
It was insane.
I love
Dude, what if Ladytron played at
my bar mitzvah?
Bar mitzvah?
Well, dude, it wouldn't be like a bar mitzvah you're used to. I think there'd be a lot of strutting, lounging, and sort of sipping of champagne off bodily parts. That's how I envisioned it.
I think bar mitzvahs can get pretty crazy. There's meant to be a lot of drinking.
And plate breaking.
Yeah.
And hoisting. And
hoisting on chairs.
Dangerous, drunken hoisting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've been to one or two. They were a good time, every one.
So, have you guys been watching Heroes?
No.
Any new developments?
Show's so good.
Is it still?
I love that show.
Thank God.
In what ways is it different from X-Men?
None.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah, so cool. I think it's different from X-Men in that they don't form like this band of heroes.
Yeah.
Like, even though it's called Heroes.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, like, they're just like people like struggling to figure out how to deal with the fact that they have incredible.
How does Nikki ever come into it? Yeah. I always wonder, like, her superpower makes no sense to me.
The split personality.
Yeah. Like, apparently she can kill like a maniac, you know, but she doesn't seem to have any superpower. She's just good at killing. I don't know. I don't. And she has a split person. Like, we don't know exactly how, like, yeah. Does she have super strength?
That one's kind of a stretch. But there's a new one. There's a new one this season. Who's a copycat. So anything she sees, she can do.
Ooh.
Which is, that one's pretty cool.
That's a very interesting idea.
Wait.
Copycat is her thing. So
right. But
if she sees somebody do something, then she can do it.
Forever.
Yeah.
But that's what
No.
Jason
not like no, not like a superpower, like a physical thing. So someone does like an incredible
physical
feat of like a gymnast.
Oh.
She can just be like, oh yeah, I can do that.
Oh.
Or like, you know, like people.
But if someone flies, she can't do that.
No.
That's interesting. That's interesting. So she's like a super normal human.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, she doesn't have to do that laborious process of learn.
Yeah. She's just a super normal human. Yeah. That's cool, man.
But that's like yeah, from a cognitive, like, neuroscience perspective, that's a really, really interesting thing. Because they know, you know, they have these mirror neurons that they've found in I think, primates that light up. Like, there's certain neurons in your brain that light up when you see something do
something you've never seen before, or
if you watch someone doing something, the same neurons in your brain fire as when you do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're called mirror neurons or empathy neurons.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah. So I don't know. That's like about all
not?
We know.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But
there's like, obviously a lot more to it, but we just don't know. Yeah.
Exactly. So those neurons are at some stage.
What about in dreams? Do they know? Well, does the same thing happen in dreams when you're dreaming of doing something and you can't actually do it in real life?
It does. So what happens is when you go to sleep, your brain is practicing things.
Yeah.
But it has
here, hold
cut
the
off.
Mic. Hold on. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're in your sleep, your brain is practicing things, but because you're asleep, it cuts off the output to your motor system.
Right.
So your brain practices things that you've seen or learned during the day, but it turns off the output.
God,
so you
that's such a
shame. You don't punch your fiance.
Or like go skate a half pipe and
yeah, exactly.
Break your neck.
But but if you just the question of like why can't we watch something once and then do it?
Yeah.
I think is pretty deep because it, you know, when you watch something do it, our visual systems are so good, we can tell what our limbs should be doing.
Yeah, but there's a lot that goes into muscle memory.
Exactly.
You know, like your muscles have to learn like
exactly. In order to be able to do these highly skilled
things.
It's
not just
one
little neuron. It's like you're using thousands of neurons for anything that you do, right?
Yeah, and you know how to. You need to know how to do what to do with the feedback you get, how much force you put out.
Do they discount inhibitions in this sort of thing? Because like kids, little kids, you know, 3-4 years old, they're pretty good at seeing what they do and then doing, seeing what to do and then do it. But I think as you get older,
you get
some sort of like physical inhibition.
Fear is involved.
Fear or like just looking like a geek. Even if you're in a situation where you need to do it right. I don't know. You just have that disconnect that kids just don't seem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like you don't want to deal with the healing process.
Yeah.
Like failure.
Yeah. You don't have any, you're out of aspirin in the medicine cabinet and you know,
and
your
plus,
heating pads
dude,
on the
that
fritz.
The sleep stuff's actually really interesting. I just watched, Ren and I watched Science of Sleep last night. Have you guys seen that movie?
No.
I think, I'm not positive, but I think it's the same guy who did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or
yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That one. That movie is a trip, dude. It's so weird. You know, like, it's just out there, and like, this guy can't distinguish between reality and his dreams. Or it's not that he can't distinguish; it's that he won't distinguish. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, it's almost like he chooses to, because his dreams are such like an escape for him, that he chooses to like live sort of, to allow his dreams to carry on into the present. And
wow, that's interesting.
It's just weird because he does things in his sleep in real life. So he'll have interactions with people, and they'll show his version of it, which is like the dream version, which is like totally out there and weird. And then I'll flip over and I'll show you like what's actually going on. And it's just
that,
like,
sounds really cool.
It's totally, it's really,
that stuff always fascinates me. And people who can intentionally go in and out of their dreams.
Yeah.
You know, and that's crazy.
Like lucid dreaming. Are you familiar with that?
Dude, I've only had one of those in my life, and I don't know how I can get back to that, where you realize you're dreaming, you know what's up, and you just control it like you can.
I've done it a few times. Like when I was a kid, you know, when you have a fever and like your hands are all big, or like the carpet's really big and you're trying to make, I don't know. I have a fever, I have really weird dreams.
Yeah.
And part of, I think, the healing process when you have a fever is actually like taking control of your dreams. Mm. And I remember like as a kid, like just being like, that's not going to be big anymore, you know? And then like next thing I know, I wake up and it's like sweat everywhere, and I'm like, the fever's gone. I'm like, just,
that's
like,
really interesting. I mean, that could be the case. Like, we have no idea, like, you know, all that psychosomatic stuff, you know, maybe your attitude changed your immune system.
Yeah. Or you that you're supporting your immune system by like trying to make whatever seems huge, like smaller, like,
I prefer to clobber my immune system with drugs. You know,
shot of whiskey,
antihistamines, shot of whiskey, some aspirin,
cocktail from Pfizer.
Yeah.
Oh, what, Bailey? How do you like to deal with your dreams?
Yeah. Yeah, I did that once.
Yeah. Wow. So let's see. We've got some. Let me read a couple comments from this week. We got.
Kiwi Andy wrote in.
Yeah, Kiwi Andy wrote in. Actually, he wrote in and he sent some music. He says, "Hey guys, so great to see you're back in podcast land. I've only just caught up on number 69, and now I see number 70 is there. I have a listener pick for you. A friend put me onto this guy a few weeks ago. His pseudonym is Bon Iver. It's really brilliant, bare-bones, folky stuff. The story behind the album is really cool, too. He hid himself away in a cabin for the winter and wrote the whole album."
Brilliant.
Anyways, cool. "I'm not too good at describing the sound, but here's a few tracks for you to check out. The whole album is also available for streaming at www.verb.com/Bon Iver.
Verb.
Again, it's nice to see you back.
The Mercedes of social networks.
Verb.
Verb.
Yeah. So.
Staring at the sink of love across the needle.
Kiwi and Eddie, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was really good.
I want more of that. What was the name of that?
He sent us two, but I could only download one.
What was the name of the guy?
It was Slow Server. Bon Ivar.
Bon Ivar.
Or
that
Ivar?
Was terrific.
It might be Scandinavian. I wonder if that's a... The Ivar.
Bon
a,
Ivar.
And going up to a snow a snow-filled cabin.
Bon Ivar. B-O-N space I-V-E-R.
Oh, who knows?
Again, you can find him on Verb.com, the next great social Bentley. Network.
I said Mercedes before, and I apologize to Verb for that. I meant Bentley.
Okay.
Of social networking sites.
Yeah.
Bentley with like
what
a diamond
tooth.
What I want
is the Ferrari. I want like a really fast social network that gets me lots of hot babes with big boobs.
Friends.
From your past?
Yeah. Because there are a lot of those in my past.
From 15 years ago that you'll talk to once.
did you read the biography about Bright Black Morning Light?
No.
At all?
No.
It's on their website.
They're my favorite band that we played on our show in the last 6 months.
That's a real statement.
Yeah.
But I was on their website and
just so you know.
and I was reading the thing. And what I liked about it was that they have a real actual kind of a similar story to Bon Ivar in that they recorded that entire album that you love so much and I love so much.
Yeah.
They recorded that entire album while they were homeless, sleeping next to a river in tents out in the forest in the Pacific Northwest.
And I thought, sounds about
and
right.
They said, of course, maybe it's a little post-rationalization on their part, but they said that they were exploring, you know, how natural light and unnatural light affects their writing style. And so they deprived themselves of natural light or unnatural light. I'm sorry, unnatural light. And they went completely by the day cycle.
Uh-huh.
And they slept next to the river, to the sounds of the river and the salmon running and whatever. And then they recorded during the day.
Uh-huh.
And they brought their inspiration from this, like, you know, touch with nature.
Sounds right.
And I thought that, and it makes so much sense with their music. And I like the fact that they do this kind of babies in caves kind of experiment where they basically just expose themselves to one sort of impulse or one sort of input
environment.
Environment. And then they see how that plays, messes with their recording. I mean, all artists do that with drugs, clearly. Yeah. But these guys did it with sleeping next to a river under the stars.
Yeah.
And like this guy, Bon Ivar. With his writing style,
isolation.
In a snowy cabin, total isolation, and saw what came out of him.
Yeah.
And I think that's
Thoreau,
super.
Henry David Thoreau.
Yeah, exactly. It's super, super interesting. I like
really
that slant because it lets everyone's imagination kind of grab hold of the experience they were going through when they make it one thing
I think,
like that.
I think like the thing for me as like a sort of a semi-amateur artist, you know, that like
no Mitch, don't, you're fully amateur.
Okay, fully amateur.
Ouch.
Hi. Glad we're friends, Dan.
Last podcast for the side.
Just kidding,
but
Mitch.
you know
I love you.
Yeah, hi. Okay, you're right, I am fully amateur, but as someone who does, as you do, create art. Like I don't know if you do this, but I struggle with inspiration, mm-hmm. and like I'll go, you know, writer's block or whatever you call it, you know, yeah, like, and it's weird. Like now that I've got a kid, like I'm finding like that the songs that I'm writing on my guitar are happy now because really? Because like the last thing I want to do is have her cry, you know, like I want her to smile. I want her to, cause that's just like, I don't know why, but like as like a parent, you want your baby to be happy, you know, like sadness isn't something you want to introduce to a 3-month-old baby, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
But then
I think that's probably deep in our human nature.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, I'm sure it is. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
But that's the thing. She's my muse now, where before, my muse used to be, like, I would write more music after a breakup than, like, if I was doing well at work. Or, like, I would do much better work when I was, like, really struggling with life because I had something to express. I was, mm-hmm. like, there was, like, something to... There was, like... So, you know, I had all this shit that I needed to get out and then to tell people about or to just to emote, you know, and like that's like where blues, I think, was like huge in like the South and you know, America, like when during
but
slavery.
You know, it's the same thing
like
as that your environment has changed. You know, you have a kid that you're really interested in and thinking about. And I think there's two things that are really interesting about that band. One of them is, you know, that. Like in the same way that we don't know how your mind affects your immune system in terms of getting well, like we have, I don't think we really know how, you know, the like nature or things you're exposed to affect how we think. And so like just to be surrounded by natural light and sounds and like rocks and dirt and water can totally change how you think probably.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just going to be reflected in the music. And the other thing is, I don't think we, with today's like, it just the closer you are to a city, the less contiguous time you spend thinking. Like, you don't spend any time thinking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just,
exactly.
I would, you know, I can
distractions are high.
Right. Something tells me that if you, you know, that if just to buckle down and think about the same thing for 2 weeks would go to like remarkable levels of progress.
But don't you have to do that for work to like?
I do, but it's still chopped up, and I still think that. I mean, when you read papers from the 60s and the 30s, and they're just like, this person is a genius. I think a lot of it is just that they had
time to think.
They didn't overcrowd and
they didn't have their email pinging at them every 5 minutes and their mobile phone going off maybe. And
yeah,
that's true. But
what's that thing about your IQ?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you leave Outlook open in the background, you check it whenever you get it, it lowers your IQ by 10 points. But if you smoke pot all day while you work, it only lowers your IQ by 4 points.
Nice.
So close Outlook and spark up.
All right.
Quote company policy at my corporation.
You're not allowed to check your emails except in the mornings between 9 and 11 and the afternoons between 3 and 6. The rest of the time, you're supposed to be high.
Mission statement.
Oh, and listening to Bright Black Morning Light.
Yeah, okay. Of course.
Best band in the last 6 months.
Oh, when you said semi-professional, you meant semi-above professional, not semi-below professional.
I said semi-amateur.
Or semi-amateur. You meant, I was thinking you were putting yourself below amateur when you said semi-amateur.
I was. No, I was. Amateur. I was putting myself below.
Oh, I see.
And then I took your insult
as... Why you're so hurt.
Yeah.
Mitch, see when you let me give you a hug.
See when you said what I thought, right. And then I thought what you said.
We're friends again.
Let's play us some more music.
I'm an asshole
or something. Need time now. Whenever you're ready. How about some acoustic brilliantness? Thank you. Wow, that was short.
Está terminado?
That's good, though.
I liked it, too. Short and sweet. It's good because, you know, that's my attention span.
That kind of reminded me of Bright Black Morning Light in a weird way.
A wee bit. Remember how we went to go see Bright Black Morning Light and we disrespected them so much because we were talking about how much we love them that they left? They stopped early.
They were so pissed.
They were
like
unhappy.
20 people. No, it was more like 50
But you and I were
people.
So in love with them, we just couldn't help but discuss in the crowd. The whole crowd was quiet and you and I were just talking the whole time about how amazing they are.
And then they're like, this sucks. You guys are talking.
And then they stopped after three songs.
Because of you talking?
Because we couldn't help it, like talk about how epic they are and how amazing they were while they were playing. And they just got upset.
They hated it.
That is ironical. Where were they playing?
It was small.
Cargo.
They were playing over at Cargo. Mm. It was tiny. There were only like 20 people there. It was small. But man, it was one of the greatest shows.
Yeah.
Such a shame.
Let's see. We got a few more people writing in, and some user submissions. Should we talk about those?
Excellent.
This is from PK. Hi, Notes Underground. I thought I'd point you towards our free net label, Paper Mill Records, specifically our latest release by Cualquiera, called Puro Hacerlo.
I'll go there right now.
He's a Spanish artist in the vein of Boards of Canada. Huh?
Yeah.
See how it's all tying together, guys?
Interesting. Yeah. Also Hasselhoff or just Canada?
or Bangkok Starters. Don't know them. Don't know Bangkok Starters.
I'll go there right now.
You can listen to the short album at www.papermillrecords.com/PM006. Also, we have many multiple artist projects going on, such as 52 Short Weeks, also a tribute to Ace of Base.
Oh,
where
God.
Every artist is a totally different genre.
Oh, man.
And he says, let me know what you think. I really like your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Thanks, PK. Let's play some Cualquiera. This is this is the artist that you recommended, and I believe the track is Me Fue de la Fiesta Dos Veces, which I think means I left the party twice. So, sweet.
Thank you.
Another short track.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Yeah.
He has funny song titles, this guy.
I like that.
He has one called "I Said No, Grandma!" Exclamation point. He has another one called "We Need More Chairs." And then his last song on the album is Glacian Women Fly Over Me. I'm into it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that music a lot. Thank you, PK.
That was super cool, man.
That was sweet. Love the user submitted tracks.
Yeah, no kidding. This website, The Peppermill, is really good. Cool. I'm cruising there right now.
We'll see. Let's go through. We got another one from Lee the Dork.
Nice. Mm. What in the world has that worldly man been up
to? He didn't send us an update.
In many moons.
But he did send us a track from the UK Hipster Kings.
Nice.
So I think this
banjo Hipster Kings.
No,
ukulele.
Oh, did I say banjo?
You said UK Hipster Kings. You meant ukulele.
Oh, yeah, ukulele.
Eucalyptus.
Eucalyptus.
Hipster Kings.
This is we're having a good time here.
He's drunk on pizza.
This is a ukulele. Maybe I said ukulele, but you guys thought I said UK.
No, you definitely said UK.
UK, Lely.
Rewind the tape.
Okay. This one's called "I Like Drink."
That's a weird album.
Keep up the good work, Lee.
Yeah, Lee.
That's really
that sounds like a party going on.
That's totally like punk rock.
That reminds me a lot of Mission Street in San Francisco and certain bands you'd see.
That reminds me of moshing and losing my shoe.
No, that was another. He sent that on YouTube, and it's actually live footage of the band playing.
Really?
Lee, are you on the ukulele or on the bass, or are you like not in the video there?
Or as they call
I couldn't recognize
the
you.
Big ukulele.
I've only seen a couple photos of you and the Herbie the Love Bug.
Sounds like he's keeping busy out there in Palatan.
Yeah. So yeah.
Sounds like the music scene's kicking.
So thanks for sending that in.
Yeah, man.
When are we gonna get another Dork Report?
Dude.
The Dork Report.
I know nothing about the Dork Report.
Oh, you got to listen to some of the earlier Notes Underground shows. Lee the Dork was a big part of the early episodes.
Pure genius.
Excellent.
Yeah. He would call in and Tell us about Powhatan, Virginia.
The entire world, in one way or another, flows through Powhatan. It's brilliant.
Cool.
Or is it? Wait, is it Pala with an L or Powa? Powhatan.
Yeah, hey Lee, if you're listening.
Powhatan sounds more Native American. I would expect it to be Powhatan.
I thought it was Powhatan.
I think it is. I think I always heard Palatan, but Powhatan. Powhatan.
So
it's where you get your power tan.
Yeah, I will get my power, my super power tan.
Don't go to Hawaii for your power tan. Come to power tan.
Is that what Mr. T does to stay dark?
That's what Mr. T would do. That's what big money earning business men
quit
do.
Your jibber jabber. Get yourself power a power tan. Is that guy a Scientologist yet?
Soon to be. Actually, he might not be famous enough.
I don't think they would respect him enough. He wouldn't wear a suit.
He's not worth blackmailing.
No, yeah. Yeah, what's he got to hide?
Exactly. Tom
Everyone
Cruise.
Already knows he did steroids.
Travolta, you know, we'll tell them you're
Does
gay.
Does anybody actually know a Scientologist? I've never met a Scientologist in the flesh. They're only celebrities as far as I know.
I would love to know if any of our listeners are Scientologists. I would like, because I would, it's, I want to just start being disparaging about the whole thing, but there must be something great about it.
Have you seen that show, Californication?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's good.
I really
it's
like
really
it.
Good. It's cringeworthy.
It's really
good.
Bad. It's really good, bad. But there's this thing where he makes some joke about, you know, someone. I mean, he's just the main character, David Duchovny, is just so crass. And he makes some joke about Scientologist, and then the girl sitting right next to him is, I'm a Scientologist. He's like, oh, I meant Nazi. You know, and she's like, so you're saying there's no difference between a Scientologist and a Nazi? He's like, ah. I don't know. Yeah. So now I'm saying.
You guys must have had a stress test, though, while you were in LA at least once. No?
No.
You weren't even curious to try the little Thetan meter stress test thing? Because it would have been so easy. Oh, really?
It's so funny because there's one over by Googe Street. And
there is.
Every time I walk by, there's this 15-year-old kid wearing a suit that looks like mom got him so that he could grow into it, but he just is not gonna. And I'm like, no way in hell you're going to convince me to join some religion that you're all excited about, dude. Like, it's not going to happen.
Did you hear? You heard, though, you must have heard about how... that new Tom Cruise movie with Robert Redford. No, wait, the one that's about the Nazis.
Lambs?
Was that the one?
Germany tried to ban
Germany
him.
Tried to stop Tom Cruise from coming into the country because he was a Scientologist.
Because Germany has lawed, actually,
against
that it's manipulative.
Cults.
They've outlawed it.
Germany, well, cults. They've outlawed cults.
Ones that actually seek out people who are vulnerable and try to manipulate them.
Right. Oh,
and they decided that
that's a crazy law. That is such a fightable
somebody
law.
Somebody told me that they actually took the personality test. They don't just do stress tests. Sometimes they do personality tests.
Yeah.
And that, like, at the end, they just kept trying to convince them that they were depressed.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, they're like, oh, yeah, well, the results of our test show that you're really depressed.
Well, of course.
I mean, just like the South Park episode.
What do you think they need for that?
Yeah.
To worry
if
about.
If you give us $2,000, we can fix that.
No. Yeah, well, you need to worry about the alien Xenu coming down in about 2 months.
Man, guys, this when we have a free moment, maybe, you know, next week, whatever, let's go get a stress test on Goose Street. Let's give it a shot. I want to see if we all come out horribly depressed.
That's actually a very good idea.
I think it'd be fun because I'm always looking for interesting things to do, you know, and I don't want to go see a movie or drink beer. I'm tired of drinking beer. So let's go get stress tests.
The thing is,
they love Berkeley.
No, but here's the problem that I am actually susceptible to stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he Renica? You think?
I get excited about things.
Were you in the Moonies for a while?
No.
But he was in a polygamist Mormon cult briefly.
But that's sweet. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Lots of kids.
Calls those just dark years.
Yeah.
No, really. What makes you think you're...
Just because I get excited about things. You know, like if like it
really
takes a lot to...
Really need ideas.
It takes a lot to inspire me, but... If something like if a good idea or something that really neat ideas, whatever, comes along, I'm like all about it. Like, I just like get crazy about it, you know? And I'm like afraid that some, like, somebody's going to have some weird way of like saying it. And then I'm just going to be like, oh yeah. Okay.
Oh no.
Yeah.
And then like,
that, that's a good thing to be aware of. I mean, I don't want to, at the risk of offending a lot of people, like I kind of went on a religion is evolved bent for a while. And you know how there's all these books been coming out recently,
yeah,
like kind of an atheist backlash. And
God,
so Richard Dawkins has a book, and then Daniel Dennett has a book, and Sam Harris has a book. And there's all these books coming out now about, you know, religion. And a lot of it has to do with, I think, suicide terrorism and kind of rationalist people, like atheists, like, you know, kind of wanting to speak out. And some of it's sensitive and reasonable. Some of it's a rant. Like Dawkins' right. book is a rant, you know, his kind of is a condescending scientist patronizing people who are religious, mm-hmm. which really doesn't help anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It has great quotes in it. Like, you know, the religion of one age is the literary entertainment of the next. Statements that are true good. And hard for people whose belief systems are, you know, based around these things.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's an interesting thing. But something with aliens in it, you know, and an energy meter. Like, we should do is do the stress test and ask them if we can buy one of their e-meters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I bet if we take that apart, it's like a voltmeter.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it'll be like a $3 Radio Shack voltmeter that just has a dial on the front. It tells you how much sweat is on your skin.
Like a Napoleon Dynamite, their time machine.
Oh, yeah.
That is, honestly, that's the funniest scene I've seen in a movie in so long. Like, the fact that he had to put the handlebar between his legs and then turn it on. That is so good. Did you know, and I didn't realize that guy, John Heder, was in Blades of Glory.
Yeah,
that was him.
Promising career.
Yeah, no, he was one of the, he was really good in Blades of Glory, too. He nailed it really well. But then again, his character was a little bit like Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
I mean, actually,
pretty much was, yeah.
Still, the handlebars had to go between the legs.
It's weird. I saw that movie Hot Rod. Have you seen that?
No. Oh, is it out?
With the
I've been dying to see that.
It's not that good.
The guy from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Wait, which guy?
He's hilarious.
The guy from Cupcakes. The Saturday Night Live skit where they go get cupcakes and watch a movie.
Hole in
a
Box.
Lazy Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hole Lazy in a Box.
Sunday. Adam Sandberg.
Adam Sandberg, yeah. You know Hole in a Box, right?
Dick in
that
a
video.
Box, yeah,
Dick
yeah,
in a Box,
yeah. That was great.
Wait, so it wasn't that good? That sucks.
Well, it was just he didn't, like, you could tell he wanted to commit, but he didn't fully commit. You
Ooh,
know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know how, like, Will Ferrell just goes out there and he's like,
on another planet.
He becomes that character and he's fully committed. And, like,
yep.
Adam Sandberg still kind of wanted to be Adam Sandberg. A little bit.
Well, of course, because his name is so close to Adam Sandler. You can tell he's trying. He's trying to be what he's not.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Name You're right. Maybe it's all subconscious.
But there are some funny funny lines in there.
I want to see it.
Yeah. It's funny, but it's so low budget. Seriously, I think they probably spent $1,000 on it. Like, it is so low budget.
How did you see it? Is it out here?
I got it on BitTorrent, I think, or whatever.
Awesome. Yeah. Well done. Yeah. Can I have it?
If I still have it, I might have deleted it.
That's a lot of space.
Yeah, I mean, 700 megabytes.
Delete.
Yeah, I need that. You know, it's not like I got a terabyte lying around here, bro. Okay.
Anywho, we got one song left, don't we?
Yeah, it's
sad. The Adios song.
Sad.
What is this one, Spence?
Ooh,
cue it up.
This is going to be the Swell Session versus 50 Cent in the Jazz Club.
I'm a in the hood and they say they saying 50 you hot. They like me, I want them to love me like they love pop. But holla in New York for sure, they tell you I'm loco. The plan is to put the rap game in the choke. No, I'm fully focused, man. My money on my mind, got a meal out the deal and I'm still in the grind. I shorty says she's filling my stash.